Good day, everyone. Welcome to the CSU Relentless Gardener podcast. I am Colorado State University horticultural specialist Linda Langelo, and joining me today is Steve Kelly, Colorado Master Gardener from Weld County. Now let's get to the heart of it, where we explore the horticultural topic of lawn care on cool season grasses. Hello, Steve. How are you?
I'm fine, and thank you for having me here today.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So what are some of the things that you would recommend that people do for lawn care on cool season grasses?
We're getting right on to the cusp of getting really active in our lawns and making them look as good as they can for this upcoming season. You know, we have the cool season grasses have a tough time in Colorado because they're really not adapted for here. So we have to do some different things on them in our region and in our area to make sure they're going to be successful. Cool season grasses like to grow, as it implies, early in the spring, late in the fall. And once they hit that hot summer weather that we always know we're going to have, low humidity, no rain, it's a challenge for a cool season grass to survive or to flourish and look good through that time. So there's some steps we can take. And what we know is that the number one factor that's going to be a successful lawn is what the homeowner does. There's nobody else that's going to come through your yard and make your lawn look good. It's up to the homeowner. And what we also find is that about half of the homeowners only do one or two things to make their lawn look good. That is, they mow and here they irrigate. And they're done. Now, some others do more than that, but it does take some management practices to keep our lawns looking good. And some of the things that we really need to focus on is efficient irrigation, proper lawn mowing, fertilization and core aeration. And if we need to, some of the spots that might need it through the year.
Okay. All right. Well, that's that covers a lot of ground for folks. So what would you recommend they do initially if they aren't good at this at all and all they do is water and mow? Where would you have them begin?
I think they, as a master gardener, they tell us that 80% of the questions we answer deal with lawn care, and 80% of those questions deal with water. It's too much, too little, or the wrong time. So by far the biggest thing that a homeowner can do is be sure they're watering efficiently. And we're almost to the time when we're going to be turning on those irrigation systems. And I have to stress always that follow whatever your HOA or your city requirements are for irrigating. So when we turn those irrigation systems on for the first time, we need to check to be sure there's no leaks, nothing's coming up out of the ground where it shouldn't, that our heads are straight and pointing in the direction that we need them to go, and that they're functioning well. You know, it's hard to imagine, but a lesser amount of water on an area of the lawn can really affect how that lawn is going to perform over the season. So if you have an area of your lawn, if a head's not working right and it's only getting half of the water on there that it should, then over the course of the summer, that's a tremendous amount of difference in the amount of water it's going to get. So first thing you need to do is when you turn that system on, check it, be sure it's working properly. That's the first thing. We like to talk about what's called soak and cycle. Many people, let's say if you're going to irrigate a specific area for 10 minutes, many of us like to turn that irrigation on for 10 minutes continuously on that area. What we like to suggest is that a person do the soak and cycle, which is run your entire system at half the time you normally would, and then come back and run the other half a little bit later. And what that does, it softens the ground and allows it to accept more water. If we run the entire system at once, there's a possibility we get runoff or other issues, ponding of water in certain spots. But the soak and cycle is a really good way to go on that. And it's not hard to do. The other thing you have to consider when irrigating is if you set your irrigation and forget it, that's not going to work. You're either going to severely overwater in the spring and severely underwater potentially in the hot of, in the heat of summer. So you need to, sadly, you need to keep adjusting that water irrigation system throughout the summer to get optimum amount of water that your lawn is going to require.
I just like the soaking cycle because it reminds, you know, people don't think that if you have a really dry spell and then you're turning on your irrigation, most of that water is going to run off, like you said, and yeah, it's really great. It's more efficient and more ideal to do soak and cycle. And I know that takes a lot more time for people, but it's you're not wasting the water. The water is going where you need it to go.
Right. The most, you know, for irrigating, the most expensive thing we do on our lawn is put water on it. Everything else we do is relatively inexpensive and easy to do for most homeowners. So if you can, we talk a lot about xeriscaping and changing out our grasses and et cetera, which is not a bad thing to do. But if we properly irrigate, efficiently irrigate, we can save a lot of water and a lot of money at the same time. So keep an eye on the irrigation systems. And the best time to water also is at night, between 9 p.m. and 9 a.m., as long as it's allowed by your cities or HOAs. And the reason for that is the humidity is higher, more of the water. As we irrigate, if it's the heat of the day, the sun evaporates a lot of that water before it ever hits the lawn. So if we can do it at night when it's cooler and more, and higher humidity, more of the water actually gets into the lawn. Having said that, if you're going to water at night while you're in bed, at least once a month, you need to run a short cycle during the day to check to be sure everything is running correctly. There's no leaks, your heads are in proper orientation, et cetera.
And, you know, our irrigation systems are becoming more and more efficient. There's the newer system and a lot.
Older ones put up a fine spray, which again, that's a lot of that just goes into the air and evaporates. These newer rotors that we see coming out put out a much heavier bead of water. It takes longer to irrigate because it's putting out less water at each cycle, but it's much more efficient because more of that water actually hits the ground, hits the lawn, and soaks into the soil.
And it's going exactly where you need it to go.
Exactly. Yeah, yep. That's the whole point. If you're watering sidewalks, it's never going to grow.
And that you don't appreciate because, you know, it hits you in the pocket.
Exactly. Yeah. Water is expensive now, and it's obviously only going to get more so in the future.
Right. So do you recommend
anything we can do?
Go ahead.
Do to conserve it. And yeah, just if we know that water is going to get more expensive, and anything we can do to conserve it and save some money is much better on all of us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What do you recommend? Do you recommend aerating the lawn versus thatching the lawn?
You know, absolutely. Thatch gets a bad rap, and it's usually not as big a problem as we anticipate it to be. We spend a lot of money and time trying to get rid of thatch through various methods and means. And sometimes they're more harmful to the lawn than if we do nothing in terms of thatch. So what we recommend is core aeration or core cultivation. We recommend it twice a year, spring and fall. But if nothing else, do it in the spring for sure. What core aeration is, core cultivation, these big machines go over your lawn with fingers that are straw-like, and they pull out actual plugs from your soil. Now, why do we do that? Well, first of all, most of our soils along in the Front Range of Colorado are very compact, they're very tight, which means it's hard for grass roots to penetrate, it's hard for water to penetrate, etc. When you pull out that plug, you're actually removing a piece of soil from your lawn and allows the rest of the lawn to expand into that area. that's vacated by that plug. So that allows the grass roots to grow deeper. It allows the water to penetrate more easily. And if you're going to fertilize and overseed, this is a good time to do it because you have holes pre-made for that, for those seeds and the fertilizer to fall into. So no disrespect to the folks that go around and do aeration. They make their money by hitting your yard as quick as they can and moving on. It's a volume thing for them. They have to do so many lawns a day in order to make their money. So if you can convince those people to make multiple passes over your lawn, that's much better than that one pass. And the other thing we like to see is that soil needs to be kind of soft when they come to do that. So after a rain that we infrequently get in Colorado is a good time to do it, or even waiting until you've turned your irrigation system on in the spring, run the irrigation a time or two, loosen that soil, soften that soil up, because the deeper those fingers go into the soil, the better it is. So twice a year is better than once. Spring is better than none.
Absolutely. And, you know, the concept of pulling a plug out and having the seed in that hole and the fertilizer in that hole, it shades somewhat that seed and keeps the moisture, which helps germination tremendously. And, you know, I was always taught making good contact with the soil benefits the germination. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Sowing seed on top of the soil usually does zero, you know, because this the seed has to be covered somewhat in good contact with the soil, as you say, in order for it to know that it's time to germinate. It's otherwise, it's the same as leaving it in the bag. It has no contact with soil, so it can't germinate in that bag. So moisture and contact with the soil are very important. And in terms of, I didn't mention, but you mentioned thatch earlier, aerating your soil takes care of any thatch problem you might have. So that's the way you get rid of it, not necessarily dethatching. If you are going to dethatch, it needs to be very gentle and not pull out every piece of thatch that you may or may not have on the surface of your lawn.
And sometimes it's just necessary to do the dethatching, you know?
Yeah, it can. Generally, CSU has some really good handouts on everything we're talking about, so don't hesitate to go to CSU on the web and search publications. But they describe, you know, how you can tell if you have too much thatch or not by just kind of bending over and scratching the surface of your soil to see if it has to be a certain depth before it really becomes a problem. You know, with our lawns have adapted to grow in whatever condition we have. So if thatch is on the lawn, it's adapted to grow in that thatch. So if we remove all that thatch, it's almost like we're taking off a cover off of that lawn and those roots, and they can dry out considerably faster than they might if some thatch were there already. Too much thatch does repel water, et cetera, but most lawns don't have a thatch, generally have a thatch problem.
And so when would you recommend that a homeowner overseed? Mm-hmm.
First of all, unless your lawn is very thin, meaning there's not much grass or you have a lot of bare spots there, we don't usually need to overseed. Our cool season grasses are greatly adapted to out and covering bare spots. You know, we say that nature abhors a vacuum. Something is going to grow in that bare spot. So if we allow our grass to do its job, if it's healthy, growing well, that grass will fill in that bare spot. But if it's extremely bad, if something catastrophic has happened, after you aerate is the best time to overseed your lawn, because as you mentioned, you've got to have contact with the soil in order for that seed to grow. And just spreading, you can do that by raking vigorously, digging with the shovel, if you're not able to aerate for whatever reason. But that's a lot of work. And if you just let it aerate and spread the seed on top of that, You could rake it afterwards to kind of get some of the soil distributed from those fingers plugs that have been pulled out. But right after you aerate is the best time to do that. And the spring would be the time to do that.
If you're going to do the digging and all of that, you might as well go out and buy sod.
Yeah, that is true. Seed's a whole lot cheaper though than sod, but yeah, it's a, you know, if you got to dig and rake and scrape, it pulls on your back. It makes your muscles hurt.
Well, and if you just want Kentucky blue, then there's plenty of that sod around, you know. So what other challenges do you see with spring lawn care for folks?
I think it's first knowing what to do, knowing the things they need to do, which we've mentioned some of those. And in addition, fertilization, it might be something they want to do. And then timeliness, I think in some ways, I'm not sure it's spring is the problem. We're all anxious to get outside and do something. You know, we've had some warm weather here finally and some nice weather. So I think a lot of people have been out doing things in their lawn. Also, another one issue that a lot of people have is determining what the real problem is. They'll see that their lawn is not doing well for some reason, and they can't understand why that's the case. And so they start throwing chemicals at it, time, money, effort. And if you're not solving the real problem, then it's a total waste of time and money. And if you're throwing a lot of chemicals on for no reason, we have to use chemicals sometimes, but if you're doing it for no reason, then it can actually harm the environment or be detrimental even to folks around you. So we have to diagnose what the problem is. And that's one thing that Colorado Master Gardeners and CSU are here to do. We will do our best to help you solve whatever problems or situations you see in your lawn. And we can do that remotely by emails or other methods that way, visiting farmers markets when we're there, et cetera. So I think probably, you know, one of the biggest challenges is knowing what the problem is and then knowing how to solve that problem, which is what we're trained to do and want to help everyone do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Can you share any of your experiences about your own lawn care?
Yeah. One of the reasons I became a master gardener is because I'm a transplant, as many people are. I came from the East Midwest, 45 inches of rain a year or more. I did not know a person. I knew no one who had in-ground irrigation when I moved out here to Colorado. So you talk about somebody having to learn a lot fast. That was my case, to learn how to manage irrigation as best I can. And I'm far from doing that yet. If you've moved from other locations in the country to Colorado, I love it here, but it's 180 different than anything I'd ever experienced. And it's 180 different from what most other people experience that have moved here from other regions. You know, as I mentioned, lack of rainfall, low humidity, soils are alkaline, where I was used to acidic soils, lots of sand in most soils, or some are very clayey also. So it's just been, again, one of the reasons I became a master gardener was to know how to deal with these sort of things. And the Master Gardener program is excellent at doing that. So my goal is not to have the best lawn on the block, but not to have people point and laugh when they walk by. So I think I've come close to achieving that so far. So it's a challenge every day. And timeliness, doing things at the right time with the right materials is key to making your lawn look as good as you want it to look. It's a direct proportion to how much time are you willing to put into it, to how much reward you get back from it.
Exactly. And I've said this before, it's one of the highest maintenance of all crops.
Yeah, exactly. And we spend more on it than most crops. Most farmers spend on their agricultural crops too.
Yes. So, and you know, here we are in a water shortage and in drought, and we're still doing Kentucky bluegrass.
Yeah, exactly. It's somebody asked me the other day why we do that, and I said, like me, we all move from many of us wanted to bring that with us. So we wanted something that looked like home when we transplanted here. So, you know, same with many of the trees we planted that are not suitable for our region either. It's the same thing. We wanted trees. So we brought the trees from the east or some other location with us.
I think that's, you know, I'm from Pennsylvania, but I don't want the trees and the grass from Pennsylvania here.
Yeah.
That's just me.
Well, you're a horticulturist, so you know the background too. So,
well, and I don't like wasting my own money and my own resources.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I don't like wasting time on putting something in the ground that it isn't going to be the right thing to do at the, you know, in the right area. I mean, you know, that's why we lived in PA. It's not going to be in Colorado. You know, I always tell people, or I ask them, you know, what is your soil? And, you know, even with grass, growing in the right soil counts for a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is a crop, same as any other. So it has to have the right conditions to perform as best it can. And we can help it along with management. And the soil is something that we really can't control once the seeds are down or the sod is down. Should take place before we ever do that. And if you watch people build homes, and I'm not picking on contractors, but they drive every heavy piece of equipment they can over what will become your lawn. And I have unfortunately seen them bury some things in the lawn that would have been better off in a dumpster. So if you're buying especially a relatively new home, you don't know, and it's sodded already, you don't know what soil condition is. They almost always have hauled in, taken your topsoil, moved it somewhere else, brought in topsoil from somewhere else to form your lawn. So it can be especially a challenge if you're a new homeowner and a new construction. So it can take some time to build that soil up to the point it needs to be.
Well, and that takes a long time. I mean, after it's been disturbed and destroyed and you've got a layer of different types of soil, both, you know, all creating interfaces between one another. And so we talk a lot about for a lot of plants to be well drained. Well, there you are, new construction.
Yeah, good luck with that. Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah. you know, I think it's all about education, educating those folks and you know, minimally doing what you can to not disturb as badly as sometimes you see what happens. But, you know, it's all part of the, when you build a house, it's all part of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And I encourage people to find out what their soil is. And then, of course, you know, we're always taught organic matter, right? Improves clay, sand, you know, it improves it.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, the best time to add that is before seeding or sodding. And then once that's done, you can top dress with some organic matter, but that's a long process to do that. The other thing, you know, in lawn care, we encourage is not to bag your lawn clippings when you mow. And this is controversial. Many people don't like to hear that. But if you think about that, when you're bagging your lawn clippings, you're removing organic matter that would naturally fall into the soil and decompose in a fairly short period of time. You've also probably put fertilizers and maybe some other chemicals on your lawn already. If you remove the lawn clippings, you're removing that fertilizer and chemicals as well that would go back into the soil. And actually, over if you do own a house that's been in a lawn that's been in existence for a long time, you can actually cut back on the amount of fertilizer you use, because that organic matter has been falling onto that soil for a number of years and enriching that soil as it goes along. And we've talked about thatch. Many people think that if we leave the lawn clippings on the lawn, that that causes thatch, and that is a misnomer. It's just not true. The thatch is from dead stems and dead roots at the soil surface, not from the grass clippings that you're leaving. So we certainly encourage those grass clippings to be left in place. It also saves landfill, and you can mow your yard in about half the time you normally would if you don't have to stop and bag those clippings up. It saves you time and effort and landfill, and is good for your lawn. So it's win-win all the way around.
That's true. That's true. Although, you know, Kentucky Blue actually does build up the most of any grass. And so periodically just collecting some of that is helpful.
Yeah. 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 If it, and there are times, you know, if you've been on vacation for a week or more, and it's, or we're getting an extremely rainy spell and you can't get your lawn mowed and the grass clippings are still laying on top of the grass after a day or two, then, you know, you can rake those up or next time bag to get rid of that. You don't want to see lawn clippings on top of the lawn after a day or two. They should go into the lawn and start to disappear pretty rapidly.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with the listening audience about lawn care?
No, I don't. Again, just CSU and Master Gardeners have a world of information. Both are here to serve you and answer any questions that anyone might have, or help you deal with any situation. As far as Master Gardeners go, it's as long as it's a homeowner, we can deal with, try to deal with any question you have about lawns, gardens, shrubs, trees, houseplants, et cetera. So we love answering questions. If we didn't, we wouldn't be doing this as a volunteer. So reach out to us, plenty of ways to find us. I think most counties have Master Gardeners. And then if not, CSU has more information than you could read in a lifetime on home horticulture.
That is very true. Well, thank you, Steve.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, and hope everyone has a good spring season.
Me too, and has a successful lawn. Well, thank you for joining me, and a thank you to the audience for listening. Tune in next time when we get to the heart of the matter on another horticultural topic.